This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. For nearly 40 years, the Chattanooga Community Kitchen has served the most basic needs of hungry, homeless, and vulnerable people in the city while offering a clear path to self-sufficiency. That mission continues under COVID-19 with many changes to keep everyone safe. Jens Christensen is the kitchen's CEO.
Jens, thanks for joining us.
Ray, thanks for having me.
Tell us what you and your colleagues are seeing and hearing now from the people that you are trying to help.
We need to think about this as a long-term process. The fear of the virus started, if you think about it, back in February, realistically, and started hitting local areas in mid-March with great concern. It was about that time that we started adjusting our services in preparation for what we anticipated would be a tremendous increase in demand. We're in probably the only line of work where too much demand is a terrible thing. But we knew it would be coming. We knew it because people on the streets were getting concerned, especially as lockdowns started occurring and shelter-in-place orders started occurring into late March and early April. We knew it because we saw that the economy was kind of starting to go down a bit, with people not being able to go to their workplaces. And we knew it because the people that we serve were talking about it. They were concerned. They were unsure. How can you possibly comply with a shelter-in-place order when you don't have a place to shelter? So, Ray, realistically, what we've been hearing is that it's hard. It's challenging for people. It's frightening for people. And there's a great uncertainty, particularly when you are already homeless or you're already in a position of insecurity, but knowing that the way the world around you is operating makes it even more difficult to escape that position.
What is different now versus a few months ago as the pandemic began? And what are some constants that we have seen over the past few months?
The biggest difference really over the past several months has been the lack of novelty now. And I know that sounds like a kind of absurd thing, but there was a little novelty at the beginning. The disruption was sudden, startling for some. It meant that we had to dramatically change the way we delivered services to try to keep people safe. Even in the beginning, we knew with our shelters, especially our family shelter, our feeding program, our clothing giveaway program, some of these four programs that provide just critical services to people, they couldn't stop. We had to figure out a way to deliver those services. They're kind of, in a way, life-bringing, life-giving services for people. But we couldn't do them the way that they used to be done. We couldn't have a dining room with 120 people seated, being served, eating together. We needed to think about group safety, about keeping people distance as much as possible. And that meant that there was an immediate disruption in the way that we operated. A few months later now, the new disruption operation is almost the new routine. People have become accustomed to how they will receive their meals. They're used to coming into the building three at a time, collecting what is often a to-go meal. They're accustomed to wearing a mask when they come into the building. They're accustomed to waiting in queue, if you will, to use the showers, to not just walking into the bathroom when they want to, but to checking with our staff at the front desk, is there room right now in the bathroom? Because you can't have a crowd hanging out in the room. We have to sanitize and clean frequently. And so in some of this shelter and other places, it was even more difficult because there were shelter in place orders and people were asked by the government to not be leaving their facility, their building. And that has really become routine in some places. People have gotten adjusted to it. They've grown to accept that that's how services are delivered. But you ask, what's really stayed the same? The need has stayed the same. People need to eat. People need a place to live, to sleep. They need to take a shower. And we're seeing that as other peers and as other partners have not been able to stay operating at the same level, many have stepped up and are operating even more intently. But as others have not been able to operate at the pre-pandemic level, the demand here on 11th Street has increased dramatically. And that has stayed constant since really the second week in March.
How has testing become a part of what you have done? How have you dealt with either people you are helping who may have contracted the virus or your colleagues who may have?
We have been very fortunate in that, knocking on wood, as I say this, so far we have yet to have any positive tests among our staff. Some of that, I think, is really just a credit to the staff. The staff have been very cautious. They wash hands regularly. They sanitize regularly. We started wearing masks in the second week of March. We have screen protectors for the people on the front lines. where they're wearing a kind of a specimen screen, a face shield, if you will. We've installed barriers. Many of these things have been donated to us by companies here in the Chattanooga area that have just been tremendous partners in what we do. And so we have been very fortunate in that the virus has not infiltrated our staff at this time. There have been a few confirmed cases among the homeless population. Those have been frightening because some of the scares occurred in shelters where people are in close quarters and close proximity. We have also been very lucky, though, that the health department is a tremendous partner. The Hamilton County Health Department operates the Homeless Healthcare Center. The Homeless Healthcare Center provides primary care for anyone that is experiencing homelessness in our area. They have been, since the early days, a location for testing. They're also a specific designated COVID spot. And so they have been providing testing at no charge to the folks that are symptomatic or on the street and requesting testing for really the past couple of months. And so we have been able to at least get access to testing for people, and that's been a tremendous benefit so that we know if there is an active case, we know where that person might have been, and we're able to treat it accordingly.
How are you bracing for whatever may come next, given the number of people who lost jobs, the number of people having trouble paying the rent even before the pandemic hit?
My peers, our partners, the folks that really work in social services day in and day out, we've been talking about this since early March. There is certainly a fear of the future. There is uncertainty regarding what will look like once the pandemic has passed, even. We recognized fairly early on that we were facing two major threats. One was the unknown of the virus. We really didn't know what the threat of the virus would be, what the mortality rate might be, what the transmission rates might be. But we were guessing at that point based on science that was given to us by outsiders and by very little experiential data here in the United States. The second threat, though, was what the response might bring. And I think, Ray, you're really hitting on that when you ask people that were already struggling. We know that prevention of homelessness has become a critical situation right now. We have partners like MetMen and others who work on that daily. We know that the prevention, though, will not work for everyone. And we fear that job loss, market decline, things like that, which we saw in 2008, 2009, might lead to a tremendous increase in the homeless population. And so, yes, the answer is we have been aware of that. We've been thinking about that, and we're uncertain what that might be. Because another factor to consider is that many of the social service providers that serve in a private way, as it may be faith-based, it may be 501c3-based, but they are nonprofit partners that are working in this field, they're already stretched as well, simply trying to keep up with the demand before we might see an economic downturn.
Where can people go online? Where can people call for more information to get help and to give help?
The Chattanooga Community Kitchen is open every day of the year. We serve three meals a day. We haven't missed a meal in over 35 years. We've been here on 11th Street since 1985, founded in 1982. People can come for breakfast from 7 to 8, for lunch from 11:30 to 12:30, and for dinner from 3:30 to 4:30 every day of the year. 727 East 11th Street, come down, get a meal. To learn more about our services, you can go to homelesschattanooga.org. That's our website. It's, again, the word homeless and the word chattanooga.org. No dashes or spaces. You can also call 423-756-4222. And the easiest way to get help is to visit our website and click. There are two buttons when you first enter our website. One is Get Help. The other is Get Involved. You click on Get Help, it's going to tell you about our programs. We operate a feeding program, as I say, that serves three meals a day. We have day center services that include showers and restrooms and mail, hygiene items, basic things that people might need. We have permanent supportive housing programs with case management to assist people in getting off the street. We operate program shelters. We operate a family shelter that serves about 150 families with children each year, called the McClellan Shelter for Families. And then we operate clothing giveaway, among several other programs that get kind of lengthy. But if you do want to learn more about it, you can visit the website, again, homelesschattanooga.org. Click on Get Help if you need help, or click on Get Involved if you want to get involved and volunteer or just learn more about us.
All right. Jens, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Right now, there is no grocery store in Chattanooga's Highland Park area that offers fresh produce. The Chattanooga Sustainable Food Center aims to change that soon by opening Gaining Ground Grocery. Holly Martin, former manager of the Main Street Farmers Market, is the center's founder and executive director.
Holly, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Ray.
Tell us more about Gaining Ground.
Gaining Ground is a project of the Chattanooga Sustainable Food Center. When we first started scouting locations to start our local food resource center, we started talking to the director of the St. Andrews Center in Highland Park and sort of formed a relationship with him. He was very supportive of bringing kind of the vision and the mission of the organization to that neighborhood. And the neighborhood has been very supportive of what we would like to do in some of our initial outreach projects. And so the Gaining Ground initiative will focus mostly on locally sourced food. We will also carry some pantry staples, some dry good items. We're trying to listen to the community around us to see what kind of products they would like to see stocked in the store as well. So we're definitely keeping our eye both on the community and just listening as much as we can. We put out a survey. We try to be active on social media so people can let us know how they would like to see this organization, what they would like to see it become in the future.
There are multiple projects that have either recently launched or are about to launch here in Chattanooga because you're all attacking the same problem, food deserts. Aside from its location, how else will Gaining Ground help make a difference in fighting that problem?
I think Gaining Ground is a little bit of an innovative model. And I've been doing a lot of research around the country, and there are communities that are sort of reclaiming their food system. I've been very excited to see some of those initiatives happen in Chattanooga. I know there's a lot of energy behind sort of that we want our food system back. We want to build a strong community food system. And I think it's a really great time to support local because you can see how farmers have reacted to the pandemic. It's been very interesting and very complicated and chaotic to see restaurants shut down and a lot of repercussions to local growers to that. And then the restaurants have started to innovate and started to work with growers again. So there's just been kind of a lot of ups and downs, and our organization has tried to understand a lot of that. We definitely want to be a resource center for, there's three major parts of our organization, which is access, education, and engagement. So Gaining Ground, the grocery initiative, is the access piece. We hope to sort of have people through the grocery store and then build the organization from there. We plan to renovate a kitchen at the St. Andrews Center after the grocery store is launched and stabilized, where we can focus on education. And then we're just going to be doing a lot of educational initiatives virtually on our website and just on social media so people can kind of understand what food issues are in Chattanooga and how they are being affected by them.
What's something about food issues here in Chattanooga that most people may not realize because most people may not have to worry about them?
I think there's some things that Chattanoogans, and I really think it's on a nationwide scale, people have realized how vulnerable our local food system is. And it seems that the last several decades, we have been taken away from our understanding of our food system. And we've been kind of taught by an industrialized food system on how we should be eating, what we should be eating. And so I think the pandemic has allowed people to kind of reassess what their personal eating and food values are. And it's been really interesting, some of the conversations that I've had from people that maybe they've never bought food outside of a Walmart or a Publix, and now they're wanting to grow their own garden. They're wanting to build community gardens, and they're really wanting to have as little steps as possible in between what they eat and their food. So they're really sort of opening up their eyes where they didn't before. And it's been really great to see.
And you've mentioned that farmers and restaurants have had to adjust and find new ways of working together. Tell me more about the farmers and restaurants that you are in contact with.
Well, I've previously managed the Main Street Farmers Market, and I've been in contact with some of those farmers and some other regional growers that have just done a really great job at innovating and starting an online point of sale system where they didn't have one before. The farmers market itself, I think, is doing really well because all of the vendors have had to get on some sort of online platform to do pre-ordering, not knowing kind of the direction of where the pandemic will head next as far as what the restrictions will be. I've seen a lot of restaurants and farmers innovate very quickly, and I think that that's probably the future of our food system is just maintaining those online ordering systems and being willing to change things rather quickly. I think restaurants especially are seeing that they're having to change the ways that they operate. It's unseen how that will play out in the future, but it's definitely something that on a daily basis it's changing. It's hard to keep track of and it's very complicated.
especially when you're having to adjust and readjust from day to day, week to week, depending on conditions and developments.
Right. And you would hope that these trends that we're seeing where people are wanting to grow their own food and they're wanting to connect with local farmers more than ever before, you hope that those trends would stay. But we don't know that they will. I think when things are back to normal, we'll see how these things, what lasting effects that they have.
And you have a charter membership program for this, don't you?
Yes, we have launched a charter membership to fundraise for the grocery space. Like I mentioned, we're very close to opening it. We're starting to raise money more for just our operational budget. And our charter membership program is where anyone in the community can join the grocery just in support. The donation is $50. You get 5% off a monthly purchase. You get a tote bag with our Gaining Ground logo on it that says charter membership. It's just a support for the grocery. And also there are corporate sponsorships that are available to businesses and larger organizations. And we've had a great response to it so far. We're trying to get to about 150 charter memberships, and we're at about 40 right now. It's been going for about a week and a half. So if you would like to join as a charter member, we would love to have you to support the store or anyone else. $10 of that 50 goes to a fund that we're establishing for the low-income community to have access to the products in our store. We're calling it our Good Food Fund. If you join as a corporate or a business sponsor, $100 of the $500 will go to that Good Food Fund, because part of the initiative is really to provide the access and access to all for those that may be not able to afford fresh food. We want them to know that there will be programs specifically for them in our store, that we want to support the entire community.
And for more information, including how to support, where can people go online?
You can go on our website. It's chatfoodcenter.org. We're also on Instagram, Chat Food Center, and on Facebook at Chattanooga Sustainable Food Center.
All right. Holly, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Ray.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots. Congress, as you may know, is contemplating a rescue package for music venues across the country. The pandemic has hit them particularly hard, and as many as 90% of the independent music venues in the country will reportedly close within 6 months if they don't receive some form of financial support. The Isis Theatre in Asheville, North Carolina, regularly hosts acoustic acts from across the country, but their doors have been closed for several months now. In an effort to offset the losses, they have mounted the Mountain Spirit Acoustic Music Series, featuring streaming performances by many of the artists who have played there. Last week, we shared part of the video posted by Irish musician Shane Hennessy from his home just outside Dublin. This afternoon, we have a performance by the dumpster folk, thrift store Americana duo Mallory Graham and Scott Tyler, who make music as the Rough and Tumble. This was recorded in Sacramento, California, where they are sitting out the pandemic. On Scenic Roots, this is The Rough and Tumble.
Well, hello.
Hello, we're The Rough and Tumble.
I'm Scott Tyler.
I'm Mallory Graham.
It is great to see you.
It is great to see you. Thank you for having us. We have wonderfully slow internet out in the country, in California, where we are currently as of right now. Mm-hmm. And so we really dig into that 80s vibe of, you know, filming screens. Mm-hmm. We're going to do better someday.
Someday.
It's going to be different.
But
someday.
It's not today. But let's start off with a song. This is an old song called Dust in the Corner.
Sunshine, it might be a little Betty is folding her slacks, at least until Susan makes her relax. After Abe died, she bought a forbidden blouse, leopard print she could wear outside the house. Would you admire me? Make me lovely.
This song is called Cohabitation Physics. You know, a lot of people talk about relationships being all about the right chemistry. And I did not do very well in chemistry.
I didn't even take chemistry.
Yeah, you know,
see how well I turned out.
Turned out great. So I did much better in physics, though, and so I've tried to understand relationships more in terms of physics, and that's what this song is about. It's called Cohabitation Physics.
Well, this is a real melodica heavy set, and I don't think I realized that before this moment.
Well, melodica goes over great in live streams.
Really?
Yeah.
You think so?
I think so.
Maybe we could take a vote on it later.
We will, definitely.
How does Acme Whistle go over?
Yeah, we'll just have to see.
Okay, I'm gonna try it then. Just throw in a little surprise there.
Yeah, just go. All right, ready?
Yeah.
1, 2.
1, 2, 3.
Starry-eyed and lonely as a satellite in orbit, I've been riding songs about galaxies, and I took a look through a pair of old binoculars. The view is cloudy, hardly telescopic, and barely in line with all the research I've been doing about the distance between objects, what's beginning, what's ending in that atomic love. Am I me or am I us? What do you think, baby? Go on, tell me, 'cause all that I want find myself alone. Does that sound strange? 'Cause I wanna be with you. Two independent people enjoying their solitude while moving their objects, independent of the other. Me and my baby, energy kinetically. If I'm an object to rest, I can't sleep unless you're next to me. If I'm an object in motion, I will go on moving nervously. Endure all this friction, my socks on the carpet. Where are you now, baby? Where are you, darling? 'Cause all that I wanna do is find myself alone. We'll be right back.
work, but your super important job is taking eons, and it's not like you're an astronaut. If I could speed up time and turn the daylight into night, so I can watch the loose debris that burns across the evening sky, pretending I was one of them, I'd intersect your orbit. We could be greater down together, you and me, darling.
Give one of those wow faces if you as well just experience the range of emotions just in like several minutes during the pandemic.
I can sit here wondering where you came from. You can't wonder how I've been. These three pines. dream or chasing a rabbit. I don't care what it is, I'm just happy to have it. I've been chasing mountains from the prairies. I've been humming songs that I don't know. When I catch the quiet of the noise you left me, I know everyone's a good dog under these three pines. Ooh. Everybody's a good dog. Everybody's a
Let's do a couple more.
Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Would you like to do Little White Paper?
Sure.
Would that be okay? Yeah. Or do you want to do Hollow?
Let's do Little White Paper.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Well, on the topic of good dogs, we had a request. We played a really wonderful series. Is it okay that I talk about other series on this series?
Yeah, I think so.
We played a really wonderful series last Tuesday called Music My Mother Would Not Like. They're doing a bang-up job of getting a bunch of musicians together, and each of us had a time slot.
Yeah, it's all on Zoom.
It's all on Zoom, and it was wonderful. It was great to see other musicians and to actually interact with audience members and see people's faces and hear applause. It was really wild. Not that we can't see your reactions here, but we had a request, a song request, and it has been months since we've had a song request. So we're gonna go ahead and play that. This is called Little White Paper. Yeah. It's about another good dog of ours. You can sense a theme, right? Mm-hmm. Can you sense a theme?
I can sense
a theme. Okay, our dog Butter, she was a real special broad. She was a big bull mastiff, a rescue from Asheville, North Carolina, from Brother Wolf. And she was our first road dog and went everywhere with us and slept on the stage, and we lost her a couple of years ago right before we hit California again. And so I think every time we get up to get going, it's kind of weird that she's not still trailing along. So I know probably a lot of you have had those same feelings. The phantom limb, I guess, the phantom dog. But it's called Little White Paper. You don't have to take me with you when you go. I'm a built-in heartbreak, everybody told you so. If you feel like the risking kind of wanna change their mind, we could burn the hours good and slow. Little white paper in your mind, I've been waiting here for some time. Little white paper, all we have to do is sign. Ooh. 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 I'm the tender to your weary, and your road to moving on. If you think this will make it right, buy us freedom, buy us time. We could burn the miles good and slow. Little white paper, and it's time. Being still just isn't our kind. Little white paper, all we have to do is sign. Ooh.
door. I'm a built-in heartbreak, just like they told you so. We can't up and change his mind. Time is up, then time decides. We can beg the hour to take it slow. Little white paper.
About being anti-fascist, which it's crazy that we need to be singing this right now. This song is inspired by some words by Woody Guthrie. This song is called
Bound to Lose.
Bound to Lose.
You gonna make it through this
song? I think so.
Sorry for all my sorries. didn't end right there. For every but an excuse and every buttoned up abuse slid from my lips into the air. Been on the other side now. Wish it didn't take this long. Sorry for all my sorries that were just there to silence your song. There's a blue door in every city. Down the street there's a red one too. In the end I'm still with Woody. All you fascists are bound to lose.
On Scenic Roots, this has been Mallory Graham and Scott Tyler, the Rough and Tumble, from a streaming show posted on July 19th on the Mountain Spirit Acoustic Music Series Facebook page, where you can find the stream in its entirety, together with the video.
Thanks so much, everybody. We are the Rough and Tumble.
Go fight the fascists. We'll see you later.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Thanks, as always, to our producers, Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, and Will Davis. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.